Present. I stare at Millie, the pills still in my hand, wondering if I've heard her correctly. Millie, we can't.
Yes, can. Have to.
She nods her head determinedly.
George Cooney, bad man.
Frightened of where the conversation is going and conscious of Jack waiting, I fold the pills back into the tissue. I think we should flush these down the loo, Millie.
No!
We can't do anything bad, Millie, I say.
George Cooney do bad thing,
she says darkly.
George Cooney, bad man. Very bad man.
Yes, I know. A frown furrows her brow.
But I come live with Grace soon.
Yes, that's right. You are coming to live with me soon.
But I not live with bad man. I scared. So we kill bad man. We kill George Cooney.
I'm sorry, Millie. We can't kill anybody.
Agatha Christie kill people, she says indignantly. In and then there were none. Lots of people die. And Mrs. Rogers, she died from sleeping medicine.
Maybe she does, I say firmly. But they're just stories, Millie. You know that. Yet even while I'm telling her that we can't, my mind races on ahead, wondering if there are enough pills to at least knock Jack out long enough for me to escape. Common sense tells me that even if there are enough, the chances of being able to get them into him are almost negligible. But despite what I've just told Millie, I know I'll never be able to flush them down the toilet because they represent the first glimmer of hope I've had in a long time. But I also know that whatever I decide to do with them, if anything, Millie can't be involved. I'm going to flush the pills anyway, I tell her, walking into one of the cubicles. As I flush the chain, I quickly stuff the tissue up into my sleeve, but immediately panic when I realise that Jack will see the bulge and ask what it is. Fishing it back out, I look up and down my person, wondering where I can hide it. I can't put it in my bag because Jack always checks it before I put it away, and hiding it down my bra or knickers is out because he always watches me undress. Stooping, I slip the scrunched-up tissue into my shoe, wedging it firmly into the toe. It's difficult to get my shoe back on, and I know it's going to be even more uncomfortable once I start walking, but I feel safer with the pills hidden there than on my body. I have no idea how I'm going to be able to get them out of my shoe if a time comes when I feel I can use them, but just knowing that they are there gives me comfort.
Grace, stupid! Millie says furiously as I come back out. Can't kill George Cooney now!
That's right, Millie, we can't. I agree.
But he bad man.
Yes, but we can't kill bad men, I point out. It's against the law.
Then tell police, George Cooney, bad man.
That's a good idea, Millie, I say, seeking to soothe her agitation. I'll tell the police.
Now!
No, not now, but soon.
Before I come live with you.
Yes, before you come to live with me.
You tell police?
I take her hand in mine. Do you trust me, Millie? She nods reluctantly. Then I promise I'll find a solution before you come to live with me.
Promise?
Yes, I promise, I tell her, fighting back tears. And now you must promise me something. You must promise that you'll continue to keep our secret.
I like Jack, but I don't like George Cooney.
She intones, still upset with me. Yes, that's right, Millie. Now, let's go back out and see Jack. Maybe he'll buy us an ice cream. But even the thought of an ice cream, one of Millie's favourite things, isn't enough to lift her spirits. When I think about how proud and excited she'd been when she handed me the carefully wrapped pills, how clever she'd been to find a solution to the desperate situation we're in, I hate that I can't tell her how amazing she is. But despite the surge of hope I'd felt when I placed the pills in the toe of my shoe, I don't see how I'll be able to use them.
The walk to the nearby park and the ice cream van that is parked there is so uncomfortable because of my squashed toes that I know I'm not going to be able to spend the next 3 hours walking round. Millie is so downcast, I'm worried Jack will guess that something transpired between us during our time in the toilets and start asking questions that she won't know how to answer. In an effort to distract her, I ask her which flavour ice cream she's going to choose, and when she shrugs unenthusiastically, Jack's appraising look tells me that even if he hadn't noticed before, her change of spirits has now caught his attention. Looking for a way to distract him and to brighten Millie's mood, I suggest going to the cinema, which will also get me off my feet. "Would you like that?" Jack asks, turning to Millie. "Yes," she says unenthusiastically. "Then we'll go. But first, Millie, I want to know what happened in the toilet."
"What you mean?"
Caught off guard, Millie is defensive.
"Just that you were happy when you went into the toilet and miserable when you came out," he says reasonably.
"I have period."
"You knew that before you went in. Come on, Millie. Tell me what happened to upset you."
His voice is encouraging, coaxing, and sensing Millie hesitate, I feel a prickle of fear. It's not that I think she's suddenly going to blurt out to Jack about the pills, but he's so good at manipulating people, I'd be stupid not to be afraid, and in the mood she's in, Millie is more likely to let her guard down. As well as that, she's angry with me. I turn my head towards her, hoping to be able to warn her with my eyes to be careful, but she refuses to look at me.
"Can't,"
Millie shakes her head.
"Why not?"
"It's secret."
"I'm afraid you're not allowed to have secrets," Jack says regretfully. "So why don't you tell me? Did Grace say something to upset you?" "You can tell me, Millie. In fact, you have to tell me."
"She say no," she says, shrugging.
"No?"
"Yes."
"I see. And what did Grace say no to?"
"I tell her, kill George Cooney, and she say no,"
she says darkly. "Very funny, Millie."
"It's true."
"The thing is, Millie, even if it is, I don't believe that's why you're in a bad mood. I know you don't like George Clooney, but you're not stupid, and you know very well that Grace can't kill him. So I'll ask you again. What did Grace say that upset you?"
I cast around quickly for something that sounds genuine. "If you must know, Jack, she asked if she could come and see the house, and I said no," I say, sounding exasperated. He turns towards me, understanding exactly why I want to keep Millie away from the house.
"Is that so?" he says.
"Want to see my bedroom,"
Millie confirms, looking at me to show she has understood what I want her to say.
"Then so you shall,"
Jack says with a flourish, as if he is granting her a wish.
"You're right, Millie. You should be allowed to see your room. In fact, you'll probably love it so much, you might ask to move in with us at once rather than go back to school. Don't you think that might be the case, Grace?"
"Is yellow?"
Millie asks.
"Of course it is," Jack smiles. "Come on, let's go to the cinema. I've got quite a bit of thinking to do."
At the cinema, I sit in the darkness, glad that nobody can see the tears that spring to my eyes when I realise how reckless I've been. In telling Jack that Millie had asked to see her room, because I couldn't think of anything else to say, I may have brought the danger that is awaiting her even nearer. After what she told me in the toilets about not wanting to live with Jack, I doubt she would ask to move in with us sooner than later, as Jack had suggested she might. But what if Jack suggests it himself? After the remark he made last night about being tired of waiting, I wouldn't put it past him. And what reason would there be to say no? What excuse could I come up with to keep Millie safely at school? Even if I found one, Jack would never back me up.
I steal a glance at him, hoping to find him absorbed in the film or asleep. But the look of quiet satisfaction on his face tells me he's already realised that inviting Millie to the house might be to his advantage. The knowledge that I've set something that is potentially dangerous to Millie in motion horrifies me, as does knowing that I have no way to stop it. Just as the hopelessness of my situation threatens to overwhelm me, Millie, seated on the other side of Jack, bursts out laughing at something on the screen, and I know that I have to save her, at whatever cost to myself, from the horror Jack has in store for her. The film over, we drive back to the school to drop Millie off. Janice is already there, and as we say goodbye, she asks us if we'll be coming back the following Sunday. Actually, we thought we'd bring Millie down to the house instead, Jack says smoothly. It's about time she saw where she's going to be living. Don't you think so, darling? I thought you wanted to wait until all the work had been completed, I point out, trying to keep my voice steady, appalled that he has made his move so quickly. It will be by the weekend. You said my bedroom not finished, Millie says accusingly. I was joking, Jack explains patiently. I wanted your visit to us next weekend to be a surprise. So, how about we pick you up at 11 o'clock and drive you down? Would you like that? Millie hesitates, unsure of what she's meant to say.
Yes, I like, she says slowly. I like to see house.
And your bedroom, Jack reminds her.
Is yellow, Millie says, turning to Janice. I have yellow bedroom.
Well, you'll be able to tell me all about it when you get back, Janice tells her. The fear that Millie might not get back, that Jack will invent a broken-down car to keep her with us, or simply tell Janice and Mrs. Goodrich that she has asked to stay on with us, makes it difficult for me to think straight. Aware of how little time I have to act, my mind races, looking for a way not of stopping the ball from rolling, because it's too late for that, but of diverting it from its path. Why don't you come too? I hear myself say to Janice. Then you can see Millie's bedroom for yourself. Millie claps her hands in delight. Janice, come too! Jack frowns. I'm sure Janice has better things to do with her weekend. Janice shakes her head. No, it's fine. In fact, I would love to see where Millie's going to live. Then, could I ask you to bring her down? I ask hurriedly before Jack can dream up a reason for Janice not to come. Of course I will. It'd be silly for you and Mr. Angel to drive all the way here, only to go back again. It's the least I can do. If you just give me your address... I'll write it down for you, Jack says. Do you have a pen? Not on me, I'm afraid. Janice looks at my bag. Do you have one? I don't even pretend to look. Sorry, I say apologetically. No problem. I'll just pop in and get one. She leaves. Painfully aware of Jack's eyes boring into me, I'm unable to answer the questions Millie fires excitedly at me about her forthcoming visit to our house. His fury at the way I've invited Janice along is tangible, and I know I'm going to have to come up with an excellent and believable reason as to why I did. But if Janice brings Millie down, there is the unspoken assumption that she'll be going back with her, and therefore less chance for Jack to manipulate things so that she ends up staying on with us. Janice returns with pen and paper, and Jack writes down our address and hands it to her. She folds the paper and puts it in her pocket and, maybe because she's used to us cancelling things at the last minute, confirms that the invitation is for the following Sunday, the 2nd of May. When I hear the date, something occurs to me and I find myself grabbing at it with both hands. I've just had a thought. Why don't we make it the Sunday after instead? Millie's face falls and I turn to her quickly. Then we'll be able to celebrate your 18th birthday at the same time. It's on the 10th, I remind her. Would you like that, Millie? Would you like a party in your new house?
With cake, she asks.
And balloons.
With cake, candles, balloons, everything, I say, hugging her.
What a lovely idea, exclaims Janice as Millie squeals in delight.
It will also give us time to get the house completely finished, I add, thrilled at the way I've managed to buy myself more time. What do you think, Jack?
I think it's an excellent idea, he says.
How very clever of you to have thought of it. Now, shall we go? It's getting late and there's something we need to do tonight, isn't there, darling?
Dread replaces the joy I felt only minutes before at having outsmarted him, as he can only be referring to one thing. Not wanting him to see how much his words have affected me, I turn and kiss Millie goodbye.
We'll see you next Sunday, I tell her, despite knowing that Jack will never allow me to come in view of my invitation to Janice. Meanwhile, I'll start getting things ready for your party. Is there anything special you'd like?
Big cake, she laughs. Very big cake.
I'll make sure Grace makes you the most beautiful cake in the world, Jack promises.
I like you, Jack,
she beams.
But you don't like George Clooney, he finishes.
He turns to Janice.
In fact, she dislikes him so much that she asked Grace to kill him.
Not funny, Millie, Janice frowns. She was joking with you, Jack, I say calmly, knowing that he understands just how much Millie hates being reprimanded.
Still, you shouldn't joke about things like that, Janice is firm. Do you understand, Millie? I wouldn't like to have to tell Mrs. Goodrich.
I sorry, says Millie, her face crestfallen.
I think you've been listening to too many Agatha Christie stories, Janice goes on sternly.
No more for a week, I'm afraid.
I shouldn't have said anything, says Jack contritely, as tears well up in Millie's eyes. I didn't mean to get her into trouble.
I bite back the angry retort that springs to my lips, surprised that I had even thought of contradicting him. It's something I stopped doing long ago, especially in public.
Well, we really must be off, I say to Janice instead.
I give Millie a last hug.
You can think about what dress you'd like to wear to the party and tell me when I see you next week, I tell her, hoping to cheer her up.
What time would you like us to arrive on the 9th? Janice asks.
Around 1, I say, looking at Jack for confirmation.
He shakes his head.
The earlier the better, I think.
Besides, I can't wait to show Millie her room.
So, why don't we say 12:30?
Lovely. Janice smiles. In the car on the way home, I brace myself for whatever is to come. Jack doesn't say anything for a while, perhaps because he knows that the anticipation of his anger is sometimes, but not always, worse than the event. I tell myself that I can't afford to let fear muddle my thinking, and concentrate instead on finding a way of deflecting his fury. The best way, I decide, is to make him think I've given up, that there is no hope left, and I take comfort from the thought that my lethargy over the last few months, which I'd been berating myself for, might actually have served me well, as a slide into total apathy won't seem so contrived.
I hope you realise that you've made everything much worse for yourself by inviting Janice along, he says, when he feels he's let me sweat enough.
The reason I invited Janice along is so that she'll be able to report back to Mrs. Goodrich that our beautiful house is perfect for Millie, I say tiredly. Do you honestly think that the school where Millie has lived for the last 7 years is going to wave goodbye to her without checking up on where she's going?
He nods approvingly.
That's very noble of you.
But now I have to ask myself why you should choose to be noble, given the circumstances.
Because I suppose I've accepted that there's nothing I can do to prevent the inevitable, I say quietly. I think I realised it long ago, actually. I let a sob choke my voice. For a while, I honestly thought that I would be able to find a way out,
And I tried. I tried so hard. But you've always been one step ahead of me.
I'm glad you've realized it, he says. Although I must admit that I've missed your futile attempts to escape from me. They were amusing, if nothing else. The small glow of satisfaction I feel at having outmaneuvered Jack is precious. It gives me the confidence that I can do it again, and I can turn a bad situation around and turn a negative into a positive. I don't quite know where I'm going to find the positive in Millie coming to the house for lunch, but at least it is only lunch. Her inevitable delight when she sees the house will be hard enough to bear during the few hours she'll spend with us. To have to endure it for any longer, when I know what Jack has in store for her, and when I don't know if I'm going to be able to find the solution that I promised her, is unimaginable. My throbbing toes make me want to ease my shoe off, but I don't dare for fear I won't be able to slip it back on easily when we arrive at the house. In the light of her imminent visit, the pills Millie gave me take on a new importance. I had planned to leave them safely tucked into the toe of my shoe until the time came when I could use them, but I no longer have time for such luxuries. If I am ever to use them, I need to get them into my bedroom, where they will be more easily accessible. But with Jack watching my every move, it's going to be almost impossible. I use the rest of the journey to consider what I can do. The only way the pills are going to be of any use to me is if I manage to get enough of them into Jack to render him unconscious. But if getting them into my bedroom seems impossible, administering them to him seems even more so. I tell myself that I can't afford to look that far ahead, that all I can do is take one step at a time and concentrate instead on the present. We arrive at the house and, as we're taking off our coats, the phone starts ringing. Jack answers it, as he always does, while I wait obediently, as I always do. It would be no use me carrying on up the stairs to try to take the pills from my shoe, because Jack would simply follow me. "She's fine today, thank you, Esther," I hear him say, and, after a moment of puzzlement, the events of the previous evening come flooding back and I realise Esther is phoning to see how I am. He pauses a moment. "Yes, we've just walked in the door, actually. We took Millie out for lunch." Another pause. "I'll tell Grace you called." "Oh, of course. I'll pass her to you." I don't show my surprise when Jack hands me the phone, but the fact is, I am surprised, as he normally tells anyone who asks to speak to me that I'm unavailable. But I suppose that, as he's told Esther we've just walked in the door, he could hardly say that I was in the shower or asleep in bed. "Hello, Esther," I say cautiously. "I know you've just got in, so I won't keep you long, but I wanted to see how you are, you know, after last night." "I'm fine, thank you," I tell her. "Much better. My sister had a miscarriage before having her first child, so I know how emotionally draining it can be," she goes on. "Even so, I wish I hadn't inflicted my disappointment on all of you," I say, aware of Jack listening to what I'm saying. "It's just that it was hard hearing about Diane's pregnancy." "Of course, it must have been," Esther sympathises. "And I hope you know that if you ever need anyone to talk to, I'm here." "Thank you," I say. "That's kind of you." "So, how was Millie?" she asks, obviously eager to add a bit of cement to our growing friendship. Ever wary of her inquisitive streak, I'm just about to wind up the conversation with, "She was fine, thank you for calling. I'm afraid I have to go, Jack's waiting for dinner," when I decide to keep talking, as I would if I was living a normal life. "Very excited," I smile. "Her carer, Janice, is bringing her down for lunch the Sunday after next, so that she can see the house at last. She'll be 18 on the Monday, so we'll be having a little celebration for her." "How lovely," Esther enthuses.
I hope you'll let me bring around a card for her.
I'm about to tell her that we would prefer it to be just the four of us this time, but that she'll be welcome to meet Millie once she's moved in. When it dawns on me that she will never get to see Millie. If everything goes as Jack wants, she will have to be kept out of sight, because how could he let anyone see her when he intends to keep her prisoner? And when he could no longer stall the people who ask where Millie is with pretend illnesses, he will say it didn't work out, that Millie was too institutionalised to adapt to living with us and, as a result, has moved into a wonderful new home at the other end of the country. From being out of sight, Millie will quickly pass to being out of mind. And I realise that the more people who meet Millie, the harder it will be to keep her hidden away. But I need to be careful. That's very kind of you, I say, making sure to sound hesitant. And you're right. Millie really should have a proper party for such an important birthday. I know she'll love to meet your children. Goodness, I certainly didn't mean to suggest that you should be giving Millie a party, or that you should invite Sebastian and Aisling along, Esther exclaims, sounding embarrassed. I just meant I would pop in quickly by myself with a card. Why not? Diane and Adam have always wanted to meet Millie. Honestly, Grace, I don't think any of us would want to intrude. Esther sounds more confused than ever. Not at all. It's a very good idea. Shall we say 3 o'clock? That'll allow me and Jack to have lunch with Millie and Janice first. Well, if you're sure, says Esther doubtfully. Yes, it will be lovely for Millie, I say, nodding. I'll see you on the 9th, then. I look forward to it. Goodbye, Esther. Thank you for phoning. I put the phone down, steeling myself. What the hell was all that about? Jack explodes. Have you really just invited Esther to some sort of birthday party for Millie? No, Jack, I say wearily. Esther decided that we should give Millie a proper party and then invited herself and the children along. You know what she's like. She almost ordered me to invite Diane and Adam along as well.
Why didn't you refuse?
Because that kind of role doesn't come easily to me anymore. I'm too used to being perfect, to saying the right thing, just as you've wanted me to do. But if you want to go ahead and uninvite them, please do. Our friends may as well get used to the fact that they're never going to meet Millie. Didn't Moira and Giles say they couldn't wait to see her? What excuse are you going to give to them, Jack?
I thought I'd tell them that your parents suddenly realised how much they miss their beautiful daughter and that she's gone to live with them in New Zealand, he says.
Horrified at exactly how much he intended Millie to be out of sight and mind, I'm determined that the party for Millie will go ahead. And what if my parents decide to come over for Christmas? I ask. What will you do if they turn up here expecting to see Millie?
I doubt very much that they will. And anyway, maybe she'll have given up and died before then, although I hope not. It would be most inconvenient if she only managed to last a few months after all the trouble I've gone to.
I turn away abruptly so he can't see the way the colour has drained from my face. And the only thing that stops my legs from giving way beneath me is the murderous rage that has filled my heart. I clench my fists and, noticing, he laughs.
You would just love to kill me, wouldn't you?
Eventually, yes. But first I'd like to see you suffer, I tell him, unable to help myself.
Not much chance of that, I'm afraid, he says, seeming amused by the thought.
I know I have to keep focused. That the chances of Millie being a flesh-and-blood person to our friends rather than someone they only know about second-hand are slipping away fast. I also know that if Jack suspects I want the party to go ahead, he'll phone Esther back and tell her that we prefer it to be a private gathering. Just cancel the party, Jack, I say,
sounding as if I'm close to tears. There's no way I could sit through it and pretend that everything is fine.
Then it's the perfect punishment for inviting Janice in the first place.
Please, Jack. No,
I plead. Oh, I do so love it when you beg, he sighs, especially as it has the opposite effect that it's meant to. Now, up to your room. I have a party to prepare for. Maybe it's not such a bad idea after all. At least once people have actually met Millie, they'll be even more impressed by my generosity.
I let my shoulders slump and drag my feet as I walk up the stairs in front of him, in what I hope is a perfect picture of dejection. In the dressing room, I take off my clothes slowly, while my mind looks for a way to distract him so that I can take the pills from my shoe and hide them somewhere on me.
So, have you told the neighbours that as well as having a manic depressive wife, you have a mentally retarded sister-in-law? I ask, slipping off my shoes and beginning to undress. Why would I have? They're never going to meet Millie.
I hang my dress back up in the wardrobe and take my pyjamas from the shelf.
But they'll see her in the garden when she's having her party, I say, putting them on. They can't see into our garden from their house, he points out.
I reach for the shoebox. They can if they're standing at the window on the first floor.
Which window?
The one that overlooks the garden. I nod towards the window. That one over there. As he turns his head, I crouch down, place the shoebox on the floor and pick up my shoes.
He cranes his neck. They wouldn't be able to see from there, he says, as I prize the tissue from my shoe. It's too far away.
Still crouching, I tuck the tissue into the waistband of my pyjamas, place the shoes in the box, and stand up. Then you've got nothing to worry about, I say, putting the box back in the wardrobe.
I walk towards the door, praying that the tissue won't slip from its hiding place and spill pills all over the floor.
Jack follows me out, and I open my bedroom door and go in, half expecting Jack to pull me back and demand to know what I've stuffed into my waistband. As he closes the door behind me, I don't dare believe that I've actually managed to pull it off. But when I hear the key turning in the lock, the relief is so great that my legs give way and I sink to the floor, my whole body trembling. But because there's always the possibility that Jack is only letting me think I've got away with it, I get to my feet and slide the tissue under the mattress. Then I sit down on the bed and try to take in the fact that I've achieved more in the last 15 minutes than I have in the last 15 months, acknowledging all the while that if I have, it's thanks to Millie. I'm not shocked that she expected me to kill Jack, because murder is commonplace in the detective story she listens to, and she has no real idea of what it means to actually kill someone. In her mind, where the line between fact and fiction is often blurred, murder is simply a solution to a problem.
Past.
That first time, I was ashamed of the way I clung to Jack when he finally came to let me out of the room in the basement. It had been a long, terrible night, made worse by the knowledge that I had helped make it the nightmare it was. Until then, I'd had no real idea what he intended for Millie. I knew that fear would be a part of it, but I had been confident that I would be able to protect her from the worst of it, that she would be able to run to me, that I would be with her at all times. Even though Jack had told me he wanted someone he could hide away, it had never occurred to me that he meant to keep Millie locked up in a terrifying room in the basement, so that he could feed off her fear whenever he wanted. To know the extent of his deprivation was bad enough, but the fear that he would leave me there to die of dehydration, like Molly did, that I might not get out in time to save Millie, broke me. Which was why, when he eventually unlocked the door the next morning, I was almost incoherent with gratitude, promising that I would do anything, anything, as long as he didn't take me down there again. He took me at my word and turned it into a game. He began setting me tasks he knew I would fail, so that he would have an excuse to take me down to the basement. Before I hit him with the bottle, Jack would let me choose the menu for the dinner parties we gave, and I would choose dishes that I'd cooked many times before. From then on, he imposed the menu on me, and made sure the dishes he chose were as complicated as possible. If the meal wasn't perfect, if the meat was a little too tough, or the fish a little overcooked, he would take me down to the room once our guests had gone, and lock me in overnight. I was a fairly confident cook, but under such pressure I made stupid mistakes, so much so that the dinner where Esther and Rufus had been invited was the first time everything had gone smoothly in 5 months. Even when we went to friends for dinner, if I said or did anything that displeased Jack, once I couldn't finish my dessert, I would get taken down to the basement as soon as we got home. Aware that my fear had a potent effect on him, I would try to remain calm, but if I did, he would stand on the other side of the door and, his voice hoarse with excitement, tell me to imagine Millie in there, until I begged him to stop. Present. It's the day of Millie's party. Just as I'm beginning to think that Jack is never going to come and let me into the bedroom next door so that I can get ready, I hear him coming up the stairs. "Party time," he says, throwing open the door. He seems so excited that I wonder what he has up his sleeve, but I can't afford to worry about it. Although I'm happy with the progress I've made over the last 2 weeks, it's important that today, of all days, I keep calm. I go into my old bedroom and open the wardrobe, hoping that Jack will choose something pretty for me to wear in honour of Millie's birthday. The dress Jack picks out for me was already a little too big, so when I put it on, it highlights how thin I am now. I see Jack frowning, but he doesn't tell me to change out of it. I guess it's my appearance in general that concerns him. My face, when I look in the mirror, looks gaunt, making my eyes seem enormous. I put on a little makeup, and when I'm ready, I follow Jack downstairs. He has prepared the lunch we are to have with Millie and Janice, and has had caterers prepare the food for the party this afternoon rather than allow me to make it, as I had wanted. It all looks perfect. He checks the time on his watch as we go into the hall. He types a code into the keypad on the wall, and the front gates whir open. Minutes later, we hear the sound of a car approaching. Jack walks to the front door and opens it, just as Janice brings her car to a stop. Janice and Millie get out of the car. Millie rushes towards me, wearing a pretty pink dress with a matching ribbon in her hair, while Janice follows at a more leisurely pace, looking around her, taking everything in. "You look lovely, Millie," I tell her, giving her a hug. "Love house, Grace," she cries, her eyes shining. "Is beautiful." "Certainly is," Janice says, admiringly, coming up behind her. She shakes Jack's hand, then mine. Millie turns to Jack. "House beautiful." He gives a gracious bow. "I'm very glad you like it. Why don't we go in and I'll show you around? But perhaps you'd like a drink first. I thought we could have it on the terrace, unless you feel it's too cold." "The terrace will be lovely," says Janice. "We should make the most of this gorgeous weather, especially as it's not going to last." We go through the hall, into the kitchen, and out onto the terrace, where cans of cold drinks and fruit juices are sitting in ice. The glasses are already on the table. There will be no going back inside to fetch them, and leaving me alone with Janice and Millie. With so many people joining us this afternoon, Jack is going to have his work cut out keeping an eye on me. We sip our drinks and make polite conversation. Millie doesn't sit still for long,
She's far too excited and goes off to explore the garden. We catch up with her while we're showing Janice around.
"Would you like to see your bedroom, Millie?"
Jack asks. She nods enthusiastically.
"Yes, please, Jack."
"I hope you're going to like it."
"I like yellow,"
she says happily. The four of us go upstairs, and Jack opens the door to the master bedroom where he sleeps and where, this time, items I have never seen before but which are obviously meant to belong to me, a silk dressing gown, bottles of perfume and some magazines, give the impression that I sleep there too. When Millie shakes her head and tells them that it's not her bedroom, he shows her one of the guest bedrooms, which is decorated in blue and white.
"What do you think?" he asks.
She hesitates.
"He's pretty, but not yellow."
He moves on to the room I used to inhabit.
"What about this one?"
Millie shakes her head.
"Don't like green."
Jack smiles.
"It's just as well it's not your room, then."
Janice joins in the game. "Maybe it's over there," she says, pointing to the door further down the landing. Millie runs and opens it and finds a bathroom.
"Why don't you try that door?" suggests Jack, pointing to the door to my box room.
She does as he says.
"It's horrible,"
she frowns, peering inside.
"I not like it."
"It is horrible, isn't it?" I agree.
"Don't worry, Millie, I'm only teasing," Jack laughs. "There's still one door that you haven't tried, opposite the master bedroom. Why don't you have a look in there?"
She runs back down the landing, opens the door, and lets out a squeal of delight. By the time we've caught up with her, she's bouncing up and down on the bed, the skirt of her pink dress billowing around her, and she looks so happy that tears well up inside me. I swallow them down quickly, reminding myself of all that is at stake.
"I think she likes it," Jack says, turning to Janice. "Who wouldn't? It's gorgeous."
He only gets Millie to leave the room with the promise of lunch. We go downstairs and, on the way to the dining room, where we are to eat, Jack shows Millie and Janice the rest of the house.
"What in here?"
Millie asks, trying the door to the basement.
"Why it locked?"
"It leads to the basement," Jack tells her.
"What the basement?"
"It's where I like to keep things," he says.
"Can I see?"
"Not now." He pauses a moment. "But when you come and live with us, I'll be more than happy to show you." It's hard to carry on, but with his hand hard on my back, I don't have much choice. We eat an informal lunch of cold meats and salads, and while we're having coffee, Millie asks if she can explore the garden again, so we carry our cups out onto the terrace.
"I hope you approve of the home we've provided for Millie,"
Jack says, pulling out chairs for us to sit on. "Definitely," Janice nods. "I can see why you wanted to wait until the work was finished before Millie saw the house. It really is marvellous.
Must have been a huge undertaking."
"Well, it wasn't exactly easy living with building work going on the whole time, but it was worth it, wasn't it, darling?" "Yes," I agree. "Where are we going to have Millie's party, outside or in?"
"I had intended to set it up in the dining room, but it's such lovely weather, perhaps we could have it here on the terrace. That way Millie and the other children can play in the garden."
"Oh, I didn't realise you'd invited anyone else," Janice exclaims.
"We wanted to make it a real celebration for Millie, and we thought it important that she meets our friends," Jack explains. "And although the other children are younger than Millie, I'm hoping they'll treat her as a big sister."
He looks at his watch.
"We invited them for 3, so would you mind keeping an eye on Millie while Grace and I get everything ready?"
Janice nods. "I'll go and get her tidied up a bit.
Before you go, I have something for her."
Jack calls Millie up from the bottom of the garden.
"Millie, if you go into the sitting room, you'll find a big box behind one of the chairs. Do you think you could bring it to me?"
She disappears into the house, and I try not to worry about what it is he has for her, telling myself that he wouldn't do anything stupid in front of Janice. Still, I can't help feeling relieved when Millie opens the box and takes out a yellow satin dress with a full skirt and a wide belt. "It's lovely, Jack," I say, hating my gratitude. And when Millie throws her arms around his neck, I feel the same pang of regret that I always feel whenever I'm reminded of how it could have been.
"I'm glad you approve."
Janice looks at me in surprise. "You didn't help him choose it?" "No, I'm afraid Jack quite took over the preparations for Millie's party. But, as you can see, he's perfectly capable of managing on his own."
"Why don't you take Millie up to her room and get her changed there?" Jack suggests.
"Go on, Millie. Go with Janice." As they leave, he turns to me.
"She may as well enjoy it while she can.
Somehow, I don't think she's going to like her real bedroom quite as much, do you?"
"Right, time to get the table ready."
He extends the already large wooden table to its maximum length so that it will seat everybody. 9 adults and 5 children, without too much trouble. As we move between kitchen and terrace, carrying plates and glasses, I try not to let his reference to Millie's bedroom detract from what I have to do this afternoon.
"What do you think?" asks Jack, looking at the table, heaving with food.
"It's lovely," I say, admiring the banner and balloons he has strung around the terrace. "Millie will love it." As if on cue, she and Janice appear, Millie radiant in her new dress and a ribbon in her hair.
"What a beautiful young lady,"
Jack exclaims, making Millie blush with pleasure. I look at her anxiously, hoping that she isn't going to start being taken in by Jack. "Thank you, Jack." She looks around at everything in awe. "He's beautiful," she breathes. "You look lovely, Millie," I say, going over to her. She throws her arms around my neck. "I not forget he bad man," she whispers in my ear. "You're right, Millie. Jack is a very nice man," I laugh, knowing that Jack will have seen the whisper. She nods in agreement. "Jack nice." The doorbell peals. "Party start," she says delightedly. Jack takes my hand in a gesture that is anything but affectionate, and we go to open the door, leaving Janice and Millie on the terrace. We usher Esther and Rufus and their 2 children through the kitchen and make the necessary introductions. They've just finished telling Millie how pretty she looks when Moira and Giles arrive, followed soon after by Diane, Adam and their children. "We heard you out here, so we didn't bother ringing at the door," Diane explains, kissing me. There are so many people for Jack to greet, so many introductions to be made, that he has no option but to take his eyes off me. And it occurs to me that I have ample time to whisper, "Help me, Jack's a maniac," into Diane's ear. But even with the note of urgency in my voice, she would think I was joking, or referring to the obvious expense Jack has gone to give Millie a perfect party. He takes me with him into the kitchen to fetch champagne for the adults and colourful drinks for the children, and when I sit down at the table, the pressure of his hand in mine warns me that he is listening to everything I say whilst making conversation of his own, as only he can. Millie begins to open her presents. I've no idea what we've bought Millie, as I didn't dare ask in case I upset the relative calm I've managed to achieve over the last 2 weeks. As usual, Jack has come up trumps, buying her a pretty silver locket engraved with an M. "Pretty," Millie beams, holding it up so everyone can see it.
"It's actually from me, because Grace has her own special present for you," Jack says.
Millie looks at me questioningly, and I smile back at her, hoping he's chosen something nice.
"She's done some lovely paintings for your new bedroom, haven't you, darling?"
I feel the colour wash from my face and grip the edge of the table hard. Millie claps her hands excitedly. "I can see," Not just yet, Jack says apologetically. But they'll be hanging in your room by the time you move in, I promise.
What sort of paintings are they? Rufus asks.
Portraits, Jack tells him, and very realistic ones at that. Grace has a wonderful eye for detail.
Are you all right, Grace?
Esther looks at me in concern.
The heat, I manage. I'm not used to it.
Jack hands me a glass of water. Have a drink, darling, he says solicitously. It'll make you feel better.
Aware of Millie looking at me anxiously, I take a sip of water.
That's better, I tell her.
Open your other presents, then you can play some games.
There's a silver bangle from Moira and Giles, and a silver trinket box from Diane and Adam, but I barely see them because it's an effort to keep myself together. I sense Esther looking curiously at me, but for once, I don't care that she's seen I'm upset.
Esther, aren't you going to give Millie our present? Rufus asks.
Of course.
Esther rallies herself and hands Millie a beautifully wrapped present.
I hope you like it, she smiles, smiling at her.
Millie opens it and finds a large red velvet box, its lid prettily decorated with sequins and glass beads. It's exactly the sort of thing that Millie loves, and as she gasps in delight, I take a grip on myself and smile gratefully across at Esther.
It's to keep things in, Esther tells her. I bought it to match your new bedroom.
Millie beams at her.
It's yellow, she says proudly. My bedroom is yellow.
Esther looks puzzled.
It's red, isn't it?
Millie shakes her head.
Yellow. It's my favourite colour.
I thought your favourite colour was red.
Yellow.
Esther turns to Jack. Didn't you say that you were decorating Millie's bedroom red because it was her favourite colour? No, I don't think so.
Yes, Jack, you did, Diane confirms. At least, that's what you told us that time you gate-crashed our lunch in town.
Well, if I did, I'm very sorry. I must have been thinking of something else at the time.
But you said it on more than one occasion, Esther insists. When you came to dinner at ours, you said that you couldn't wait for Millie to see her red bedroom.
She looks over at me.
Isn't that what he said, Grace?
I'm afraid I don't remember.
I mumble. Does it really matter? Jack nods at Millie, who is busy putting her other presents into the box. Look, she loves it.
But it's strange to have made the same mistake twice, Esther says, genuinely puzzled.
I wasn't aware that I had.
Well, I could take it back and change it for a yellow one, I suppose, she says doubtfully.
Please don't, I tell her. Jack's right. Millie loves it.
For the next 10 minutes, I watch her watching Jack, and I'm glad that in his efforts to destabilise me, he has overplayed his hand. Not that anyone except Esther seems to have noticed. At one moment, she looks from Jack to the red box, a frown on her face. Suddenly, she turns her attention back to me.
I hope you don't mind me asking, Grace, she says. But are you sure you're all right? You look very pale.
Oh, I'm fine, I reassure her.
I've noticed it too, Diane nods. And you've lost weight. You haven't been dieting, have you?
No, it's just that I don't seem to have much appetite at the moment.
Maybe you should go and see your doctor.
I will, I promise.
You really need to take more care of her, Jack.
Esther looks at him appraisingly.
I intend to.
Smiling, he slips his hand into the inside pocket of his jacket and draws out an envelope.
I didn't see why Millie should be the only one to have a present today.
Adam, please take note, Diane groans.
Here we are, darling.
Jack hands me the envelope. Open it. I do as he says, and find myself looking at a pair of plane tickets.
Come on, Grace, don't keep us in suspense, Diane implores. Where's Jack taking you?
Thailand, I say slowly, horribly aware that everything I've managed to put in place since Millie gave me the pills
will all have been for nothing if we go away.
What a lucky girl, says Moira, smiling at me.
I think you meant to say something, Grace, Esther prompts.
I raise my head quickly. It's such a shock. I mean, well, it's a lovely thought, Jack, but do we really have time to go away?
You did say that you wanted one last holiday in Thailand before Millie comes to live with us, he reminds me, making it sound as if I think of Millie as some sort of burden.
But you said we wouldn't be able to. Didn't you say that you had the Tomasin case coming up?
Yes, but I'm working hard to make sure it'll be over by then.
When are you going?
Giles asks. I've booked tickets for the 5th of June. Adam looks at him in surprise.
Will the Tomasin case be finished so soon?
I hope so. It's going to court next week.
Well, even so, I mean, it's not so clear-cut this time, is it? From what the papers are saying, her husband is squeaky clean.
Jack raises his eyebrows. Don't tell me you believe what you read in the papers.
No, but the theory that it's a set-up and that she's out to frame her husband because she has a lover is an interesting one.
It's also total fabrication.
So you're confident of winning?
Absolutely. I've never lost a case yet, and I don't intend to start now.
Adam turns to me. What do you think, Grace? You must have read the papers.
Me? I think the husband is as guilty as hell, I say, wondering what they would say if they knew that I barely know what they're talking about.
Sorry, but I can't imagine him as a wife-beater, says Diane. He just doesn't look the type.
Jack tells me they're the worst kind, I say lightly.
Esther's eyes flicker towards me.
Must be exciting, having a husband who deals with such high-profile cases, she says, holding my gaze.
Actually, Jack rarely talks about his work when he comes home, and especially not the details of his cases, for reasons of client confidentiality. I'm sure it's the same for you, Diane.
I turn to Jack with pretended anxiousness.
But to get back to our holiday, wouldn't it be better to postpone it until Millie can come with us?
Why?
Well, if there's a risk that your case might not be over in time.
It will be.
But what if it isn't? I insist.
Then you'll go on ahead and I'll join you.
I stare at him.
We're not cancelling the holiday, Grace. As everybody has pointed out, you need a rest.
You'd really let me go on ahead without you, I say, knowing he would never allow such a thing.
Of course.
Esther looks at him approvingly.
That's very generous of you, Jack. Not at all. I mean, why would I deprive my beautiful wife of a holiday just because I can't go?
I'd be more than happy to keep her company until you arrive, Diane offers.
Sorry to disappoint you, but I have no intention of not being able to make it, Jack tells her, getting to his feet.
Grace, I need your help in the kitchen, darling. I follow